helped co-found the Dream Defenders. We marched for miles to Sanford. And then you see a big march in June of 2012 with 50,000 people that said end stop and frisk. And I don't think that would have been, that would have had the new people involved as it did if we didn't have so much like repression from the state. And I think part of it was to make people not come out, to make people were really threatened by Occupy at that time. And I think that that's what ended up happening. And it was really beautiful to see people get involved and actually call out police brutality after that.
Nalini Stamp, I want to thank you for being with us. This has to end this discussion today. Nalini Stamp of Working Families Party in Philadelphia, Astor Taylor of the Debt Collective speaking to us from Asheville, and Jillian Johnson, Mayor Pro Tem of Durham, North Carolina, all three involved in the Occupy movement 10 years ago. And we continue to cover it when we look at the bills that are in Congress right now and so much more. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Negative Land with Susie plus Belvin Blechdom on Monday, September 20th from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Holocene in Portland. Created in collaboration with live visual artist Susie, Negative Land presents a performance project about the world we live in, the minds that perceive it, and all of the evolving forms of media that inevitably insert themselves between them. Again, that's Negative Land with Susie plus Belvin Blechdom on Monday, September 20th from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Community radio is a democratic type of media, but what does that mean? This fall drive, KBOO is examining what democracy means to each of us by featuring content focusing on picking apart democracy. To support our programs during this fall drive, go to kboo.fm and get the limited edition Sounds of Democracy shirt.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned natural foods cooperative featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a farmer's market every Wednesday year-round. Located at Southeast Tibbet Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years. Online at peoples.coop.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8:02 a.m. It's Friday. Mind that gap. We gonna bridge it. Girls are powerful. Stay tuned.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. On the phone with me is Althea. How are you, Althea?
Hello. Good morning. I'm doing all right.
I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Tammy, by the way. It's nice to nice to be here to hear your voice. Althea is remote today, but still doing the thing. So glad to have you here.
Yeah.
Yes, in the peripherals, kind of. And of course, Terrestrial Angel Sonia doing the thing. Thank you so much, Sonia. How are you?
Got it. Wow. As always, you know, that's that opening tune always gets me, you know, the pneumatics in this chair help me, like, you know, get my bounce on.
I'm scared to bounce on these chairs. They're a little crickety, but that's why I don't move too much in them. But yes, definitely the song gets the blood pumping and going, and Beyonce is always a good way to start the day. Per usual, we are going to have our show in two parts. The first part, we're going to be doing a bit of a roundup of some of the interesting cultural and Yuzi stuff that had happened this week. And then for the second part, we're going to be asking a community question in which we invite listeners to call in and answer the community question. But yeah, I guess we can get on ahead with the get ahead. And for our first part, some of the interesting things that have happened this week include a Wall Street Journal investigation in what they're dubbing the Facebook files. And there's been a lot of interesting findings. Kind of the worst, in my opinion, is that in all these findings, which we'll get into in a moment, Facebook knew that this was an issue, and they've been kind of not necessarily concealing it, but downplaying it to the public. So this is, in my opinion, very important that it is getting the traction that it is. But Althea, do you have any input on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of, I don't know, like, just social media as an industry is wildly unregulated. And to see that, you know, a lot of the questions that people have about it in terms of, you know, the way its influence is weaponized, the impact that it has on young people, like, who get special treatment on these sites, that isn't, like, an open-ended question. It's like, huh, well, good question. Like, thank you so much for asking. It's like, no, Facebook has the answers, and they've just been concealing it. And, you know, to have data on your, like, company, the thing that you're selling, without, you know, making people pay for it, that says that, you know, Instagram has, like, a massive toll on young people is wild, you know? And I don't know. I mean, am I surprised? I think that's something that whenever we talk about, you know, Facebook, social media companies, am I surprised that they're like this? No. But I still think that it's upsetting and, like, worth talking about, you know, the fact that there is demonstrable evidence that it has a particular impact on young people, that, because, you know, what we're oftentimes looking at, and there are people out here, like, eager to research it, we're looking at the outcomes rather than the inner working and all of the different things that can be measured, like, internally. And so I think that sometimes conversations about it get derailed because it's like, oh, you're, like, making that up. Oh, you think all social media is bad? Social media isn't, like, good or bad. It's a tool, you know, but it has these impacts that, you know, have been concealed from the public such that they have not been mitigated, you know?
Oh, yeah. And the research itself is research that Facebook conducted into its own self. So, again, it's like setting up these premises that you aren't going, it's like, what did you do this for then, right? So, but now, you know, we have some of these figures, and they're really pretty jarring. And I think once we had a caller say something that kind of, like, really resonated with me about, well, how is this any different? All of this has been happening since, you know, the beginning of, you know, media. And true, yes, but Althea, I think to that caller, you said something in the likes of, again, it's very, very, it's not regulated. It's very, it's constantly within arm's reach, and it's, you know, people are on their phones right before they go to bed, first thing when they wake up. And sure, there's something to say about television, radio, and literature, but there is a thing called the FCC, which I'm not seeing, you know, Facebook having to deal with the same hoops of, you know, moderate, just like being mindful of what they are putting out. Again, they know exactly what they're doing, the effects of it, but they are just not really into fixing it, or at least not... not yet in a way that's actually going to be meaningful. Maybe they will, I don't know. But some of these stats do show, for example, the journal, in the journal investigation, they were citing Facebook numbers themselves, so the numbers that Facebook, the company itself, published, and they are showing that amongst teen who are the most susceptible to being influenced through social media, specifically Instagram, 13% of British users and 6% of American users traced suicidal thoughts amongst teens back to the photo sharing app of Instagram. Another thing that the report showed is that 32% of teen girls who felt bad about their body image felt worse after looking on Instagram. So there's a lot of these comparison, and this is more specifically, I guess, what we specifically want to talk about today is like the toll that it takes on teenagers, because this is when we were kind of like looking at all of the different, I guess, bad things or all the different effects of Facebook and Instagram. This one kind of stood out the most, and it's super negative and kind of frightening. And again, while doing research for this, I didn't realize that Instagram are planning on rolling out a Instagram Kids. So that's even more scary.
Is that real?
Yes, that is real. And
God.
So it's kind of coming on the heels of that. And it's so I really hope that this maybe can discourage them or maybe create some sort of something, because that's really terrifying. Yes, Instagram Kids would be for under 13.
Oh my gosh, that like makes my skin crawl, to be honest. Mm-hmm. Especially because, like, I mean, not to like get too off track here, but like YouTube's done the same thing, YouTube Kids, mm-hmm. and the way that has been exploited, because you know kids have an iPad with the autoplay on, and there's like, you know, it's just keyword generation. It's not content that is like at all meaningful to a child. It's Spider-Man and Elsa like running through a field, you know. Spider-Man and Elsa was like a huge proliferation of content on YouTube that wasn't consumed by anybody who like was, I don't know, cognizant of what they were watching, you know. Not to like say bad stuff about kids, but like, you know, you put a kid in front of something that has characters that they recognize, they're not necessarily like digesting and determining whether or not that content is good for them. So anyway, that's what it made me think of. I don't want to get too far off track of the Facebook Instagram train, but one of the things that I would want to say about it is, like, I mean, I think that there is, and when we're saying, and when people in general are saying like, hey, social media needs to be regulated, that doesn't necessarily mean that it has to come from like government. I think there's probably aspects of it that government would do very well at protecting, particularly like the exploitation of people's privacy and data. Like, that is a right that is guaranteed in the Constitution, and so for a for-profit company to be exploiting people in that way, like, that is something that I think government would be well equipped to deal with, right? But when we're talking about body image and expectations of how people, young people, interact with social media, maybe the idea of regulation is better put to, you know, like cultural or society level, you know, like, hey, maybe we should reform our thinking. How can I protect and affirm the kids in my life so that they're not, you know, consuming all of this without thinking about it? And I mean, I kind of count myself lucky, because like Facebook got big when I was in middle school and my parents did not let me have it. For whatever reason, I had Twitter, but I was just like trying to do jokes on Twitter, you know. And then I didn't get Instagram until I was in college. So there was like a whole level of interaction that I think, you know, the intensity of adolescence put online is pretty extreme. And I've seen my younger siblings go through it. But even like, you know, as an adult, sometimes I have had the realization of like, hey, I follow this person on Instagram. I liked the art that they made, or I liked their aesthetic, or I liked their fashion, and it seemed like they were going cool places and doing fun things. But eventually realizing it's like, hey, the way that they like talk about their body, or like, you know, present their relationship to their body, that actually, I'm noticing that has an impact on me, and I need to take my own action and like filter that out, you know. So maybe what part of it could be is like, you know, giving people the room in this space to say, hey, if you're like not loving the content, you don't have to follow people. I got off track. Thoughts?
I think the there is some in the research. They were also talking about how it's possible that a lot of teens just feel the need to be on social media just for kind of what you described, like that FOMO or fear of missing out. And there's also like the social aspect that comes into it because, you know, Frank, yeah, like, you know, like you said, I felt a bit pressured into getting social media because people would be like, oh, you don't have it? Like, what, how do you, you know? And yeah, it's true. Like, I would miss out on a lot of things, but now I feel a bit more connected. I do want to push back a little on what you said, Althea, as far as the regulation, which I totally do think that there needs to be some sort of regulation. Although I am fearful of having the people who brought us the Patriot Act to, you know, be mindful or like good about our data and stuff like that. But yes, there definitely to have some sort of regulation that protects us, the people. And I think, you know, businesses have definitely made or created products that were harmful for people, and I think some of them have decided to, you know, go the better path of not killing their consumer. But I think at the end of the day, if this is something that's too toxic, like this is, it's just not sustainable. So I think that both for the bottom line and also, you know, humanity, it should be, they should definitely do something about this. And the fact that it is out, because again, they've known about these stats and like the science behind the addiction of, you know, of being addicted to social media and especially the effects on teens. So this is nothing new to them. They just didn't care to do anything. But now following this Wall Street Journal investigation, and it's up online, just titled Facebook Files, there is a breakdown and also like the science that goes with it. So hopefully now that the public is more aware of it, there'll be both like civilian action and hopefully something on a, just something that matters more, whether it is or not matters more, but something that will put a bit of a fright into Facebook so that they can get mm-hmm. their stuff together. And also Instagram Kids is this, I just don't see how that's a good idea. I don't know who sat there and was like, you know what these children need? Pictures of women with BBLs. Like, this makes no sense to me. Or like just oversaturation of things that are not not like that can be very harmful. I mean, there's some pretty harmful stuff on Instagram that, like as you said, as an adult, you can kind of lose track. But yes, mm-hmm. yeah.
I will definitely agree with you about Patriot Act. U.S. government hasn't been great about it. I would just point out that like maybe the U.S. government can't be trusted. Government in general has done action about it, right? Not our government, obviously, but like in the wake of Cambridge Analytica, you might have noticed that there was like, at least for me, you know, all of these, you know, websites that I have an account on, like Hulu or whatever, are send you an email. It's like, hey, we've updated our terms of service. Like, we would love to like have you look at this. That was as a result of the European Union like increasing its regulations and tightening what kind of data protection was allowed within the EU, and most companies across the board just like changed their policy as a result of that. Not to say that that's like a fix-all, but like there is room for that to like have an impact. Whether or not we trust the US government to make those kind of changes in the wake of the Patriot Act is a point well taken.
Definitely. I appreciate you. And we have well, we can move on to our next subject of the Nabisco strike and how it's been going on. It's kind of been a hot spot here in Portland, but definitely has had ripple effects throughout the country. And I think there was a bit that happened yesterday as far as negotiating goes. I think we have a clip for that.
Yeah, let me set up the clip really quick if you don't mind.
Sure.
So Nabisco workers have been, it's their second month now, this is like the fifth week, and the picketers outside the bakery have like the past, not like last night, but the few nights previous have had like, you know, a little bit of confrontation with like hired security guards, with protesters trying to stop, you know, scabs from crossing the line. And yesterday there was a tentative agreement that, you know, Nabisco's parent company made with the union, but the union, like all of the union members have to vote on it. And again, to like you know, refresh everyone's mind about, like, what's at stake. Basically, Nabisco workers worked through the entire pandemic for not great pay. And Nabisco has been closing factories in the U.S. and outsourcing labor to Mexico, where it's cheaper. And they have proposed basically creating an alternative work week, which basically means they would never have to pay overtime. And already workers are working, you know, 14-hour shifts for 2 weeks at a time. And that is, like, far and basically, like, degrading their working conditions progressively. And so, you know, that's why they're on strike. I'm sure they could explain it better than I could. But some of the work, so they have this proposal, right? And also, I should mention that, like, Nabisco profits, like, they made so much money during this time, and workers got, like, zero share of that. But they've come to this tentative agreement, unclear about what it says, obviously, outside of, you know, people in the union. But some of the strikers out in Portland have said that they have voted against the proposal. So here's a clip from them.
Member. My name is Ruben Arroyo. I'm here with the rest of some of our members from the Local 364. We just came back from a meeting. The proposal, we're voting no. We voted no. We want to know that we support you, but we also need you to support us, and we're the first ones to walk out. We're still going to fight this thing, and we need you to vote no. We got your back. Stay strong. We're united. We got your back.
Stay strong, vote no. And that was a clip from a Twitter user, Laura Liu. I'll link it on our show notes if anyone is interested in seeing the original video. It's unclear, like, what chunk of the union membership has voted no. We won't, like, know for a little while. But, yeah, that's kind of the status update on that. And, I mean, the strike in Portland spread to other cities, Denver, Chicago, Virginia, and they've gotten a lot of support from, obviously, local political figures here and, like, around the country as well.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, and it's been going on for a little bit, and I love to when, like, things happen and they don't just kind of, like, fade out and they become stronger and stronger, and yeah, like you said, this is a something that started here, but it's like just exploding in the best way possible. And also, I'm loving all of the memes and all of the, like, Nabisco boycotting jokes and stuff that I'm seeing around, because, you know, we live in a town with a lot of really funny people. So they're really taking this on in a lot of different ways. And I think I'm just trying to look at because I know that they have a website where they have a lot of this information, some of their upcoming just, like, ways to learn more, support. And I think we will also put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah. And I mean, it's 5 weeks strong is really amazing. And I mean, we love to talk about, you know, labor and the workers' rights here, obviously, but also that we've seen a bunch of, like, strikes like this year, even in the past, like, couple months, is, like, really incredible, to see, you know, workers taking charge in that kind of way. There was, like, the Frito-Lay strike. That wasn't local, but, like, the Frito-Lay strike happened. The Amazon union attempt in Georgia, like, those were, or maybe it was Alabama, I forget. Those are, like, really significant, and especially, and, you know, having those issues be visible, especially after this year of, like, very hard work for people in jobs that were deemed as essential workers, I think is pretty significant.
Yeah, and I mean the what these places are doing, I think they're just so despicable, honestly, in my opinion. The record profits and you know, the workers have had to deal with, you know, like you said, having health care reduced after working 12-hour work days. And I'm reading here that there was also in 2018, a worker was mentioning that the company had stole the people's pension in 2018, and they are getting to the bargaining table after a year of a pandemic and making record profits. And it's really, 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 really gross and not cool. Not a fan of it. Not a fan of it.
Yeah. And there's, and, you know, now it's gotten to the level of security guards coming to the picket line to intimidate people. Mm-hmm. There's, I guess this person is not like a union, a member of like the Bakers Union at Nabisco, but like a local union member who came to support them is like filing a lawsuit against Nabisco because they got pinned against a van and like hit by these security guards. Mm. Which is, you know, it's like, the it's like, you know, the stuff is not like hypothetical, you know.
Yeah. And it's also just kind of goes on par with what's been, you know, this is history has shown itself to that when things come to an impasse, things are going to get violent, and I hope that it wouldn't get to this point, but they're not relenting, so that's what's happening there on that front. And that's so thank you for that clip. For our third story of this morning, before we go to our part two of the show, we are talking about, drum roll, Nicki Minaj. So over the, what was it, yesterday or 3 days ago or something, Nicki Minaj tweeted out I don't know if I can say, she tweeted out that she is, well, it was about the Met Gala, and she tweeted out that she did not go to the Met Gala because she did not feel the need to have to get vaccinated, and then followed it up with a I don't want to say strange, but it was, she said that her cousin's friend had some issues after having the vaccine, and so this is why she doesn't want to have the vaccine, and it's just one of those stories that really kind of upset a lot of people, I think, for a lot of different reasons. First off, you know, this is a person who has, I think, about like 15 million people that follow them on social media, so that's quite a reach. And then also this, the he said she said thing is kind of like, is that really what you should be doing? But yes, a lot of people are upset, and a lot of people are, you know, going on TV, radio, and television to talk, and online to talk about it. And it is being called, I don't know if I can say what it's being called, but yeah.
I think you can. I'm gonna make the assertion that we can say what it's called because this is a news item. And to be specific about her side effects, her, you know, person that she has some kind of relationship with had, because obviously, like, you know, COVID vaccines, there are like side effects, you know, like your arm hurts, and I mean, for me, I like threw up just for a day. But what she claimed was that her cousin's friend in Trinidad had swollen testicles and impotence as a result of the COVID vaccine, and that was why she didn't want to take it, which led to the entire incident being hashtagged Ballgate, and like Nicki Minaj has been using that terminology. People are referring to it as, and you know, her kind of stance is like, don't let people bully you. This happened to my cousin's friend. The health minister of Trinidad and Tobago like came out and said that was like no, Nicki Minaj is wrong. Like that's not that. And you know, with those kind of symptoms, it might lead, I guess, more to like a sexually transmitted infection rather than a result of the coronavirus vaccine. But now what Nicki Minaj is doing, I mean, yeah, there's been like, you know, every pundit in the book talking about it, but she's gonna talk with the White House. Like, they're gonna call her and try to like set her straight, I guess.
Yeah, the actual tweet is, the White House has invited me, and I think it's a step in the right direction. Yes, I'm going. I'll be dressed in all pink, like Legally Blonde, so they know I mean business. Okay, I'll ask questions on behalf of the people who have been made fun of for simply being human. Hashtag Ballgate Day 3. So that's a move. I am a bit confused as to why a multimillionaire needs to get special treatment. I mean, it's just kind of like, don't you have enough people that you could go to that are certified and can explain to you the why this is wrong, or why maybe you shouldn't be on all the fronts, like a publicist, a private doctor. I mean, there are just so many different options. So I don't know. I was kind of thinking this might be a bit of a stunt, but it also goes to show, like, you know, that a lot of people have, or that a lot of different types of people may have skepticism, and even people who, you know, and I'm just making a bunch of assumptions now, right? That do have means and do have ways of getting themselves educated, need that little extra push to actually get themselves educated, because there's a lot of, I'm not sure, but this is just kind of like, come on, Nikki, you could do better. But she's trying to do better, at least publicly. The public facing Nicki Minaj is saying that she's going to go to the White House and get a talking to, and hopefully, you know, her the people that she has influenced through making this statement will have more information about this. And so far, impotence and swollen testicles are not known side effects for the vaccine. So we can, you know, we can rest, put that to rest.
rest easy in that regard. Yeah, and I mean, obviously it's like a little bit jarring, and I know that's like, that was one of the responses that I had. Like, I did not, like, Nicki Minaj coming out against the vaccine was not what I had on my like 2021 bingo card or whatever, because wild stuff happens in the news all the time now. And I think a lot of people are frustrated with her because she has such like a big platform and like is spreading questionable information about your cousin's friend who had this thing happen to them. But I do appreciate that, like, her response isn't to just like dig her heels in, you know what I mean? It's like, well, let me see it through. I can call the White House. I'm of a level of celebrity and influence that I can call the White House and someone will take the time to debunk things for me. I'm going to do that, which I appreciate, because I think there are other celebrities out there that would not do that. Or, I mean, a lot that wouldn't have the opportunity, but a lot that, like, wouldn't take the opportunity as well. So
I think goes a little bit hand in hand with, like, just that bit of like the influence and power thing. And I wish that a lot of other, you know, like, that we held that same energy for everyone. It's like, this is spitballing, right? Maybe there is like a monthly meeting somewhere in D.C. where the doctors of the White House talk to the public or something. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying, but it just, I don't know. It's like, it doesn't sit right
with
me.
You're making them up now.
it doesn't sit right with me that this person made, you know, put this out there. And, you know, I mean, I'm glad that, you know, she's not getting dragged and stuff, you know. I mean, she definitely was, but I don't know, we're not keeping that same COVID compassion or COVID misinformation compassion. We're not giving that to everyone, you know. So is it because she's influential in, you know, kind of get more bees with honey than vinegar or something? I don't know, just all kind of things to keep in the head of, yes. But we are going to go on a very, very, very short musical break and be back for part two, in which we will be taking on listeners' calls. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment or two. Thank you. You are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap with me, myself, Tammy, and of course the one and only Althea. And in the air room doing the thing is Sonia. Thank you all so much. We are.
Yeah.
Oh,
can I say one note about our midway song? I just want to back it out that it was Here Comes the Rain Again by the Eurythmics, hopefully bringing some good rain energy to a region that needs some rain.
Yeah.
Continue.
Yeah. And that was all Althea. Well, usually I pick out the midway song. That was all Althea. And I'm glad that you did, because it definitely gave me some good memories. Good memories. Part two of our show is our part where we do listener call-ins. And we are going to be talking about AOC's Met Gala dress. And we're going to be very mindful and respectful. And we are going to keep it very focused. Because, you know, people, I don't know, they have a tendency to, you know, be very rude to women, especially women of color. So more specifically about the actual dress, we want to know from listeners what you think of this, or do you think of this as a political stunt? Do you think that this was effective in any way? And how does it relate to the commodification of anti-capitalism? Althea, that was a nice one there. And for those who don't know, AOC wore a very fancy dress to the Met Gala that had tax the rich written on it. And people were not into it. The Met Gala is an event that's for the Met, and it's supposed to raise funds for the museum.
It's the Costume Institute. They raise a lot of money for it.
Because they need it, and they, I'm not going to go into that because it's in my mind, it's pretty ridiculous, but I understand how it can be very impactful and helpful. But more specifically, the dress. And the phone number is 503-231-8187. What's your opinion about it? You think at all it had like any positive effect, and that could get influence people in the way that AOC wanted it to? Althea, any opinions? Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, so, I mean, the reason that we're talking about it is not to, like, roast AOC, but to kind of, like, you know, pick apart that as a, you know, like, political stunt, as an act, and, like, the way that people have responded to it. Because, you know, the people that love to go after her on Twitter are typically, like, right-wing people, and they're like, hey, you know, you wore a tax the rich in front of a bunch of rich people, like, what the heck, you know, from right-wingers, which, like, I understand that that was her intention to do, but I don't know, but she's also gotten a lot of criticism from, like, progressives and left-wing people for it as well, just kind of that it isn't quite as, like, meaningful as maybe she wanted it to be, because in what circumstance are you ever going to convince the rich to tax themselves? Like, it's such a far off notion that you have, like, the multi-billionaires, Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, like, vocally saying, yeah, you should tax the rich, because it's never going to happen. Like, it's so far from a reality of American politics. And also, tax the rich is a pretty agreeable statement, you know? Like, there's very few people that make enough money that isn't hidden in the Cayman Islands that would even be, like, remotely concerned about that. But we would love to hear your thoughts. Give us a call, 503-231-8187.
Yeah, the Hunger Games, the Met Gala seemed to have a lot of, like, I don't know, like, quote-unquote radical statements, as fashion.
Celebrities, they always try.
They do. God bless them. They try. And trying is the first step, I guess.
The big name people never nail it, I will say. If it's someone who, like, you, maybe if, I don't know, just the people who have a lot of name recognition typically do not nail the political statement via fashion award show celebrity circuit. That's what I'll say. I think there's other political statements that, you know, lesser known people will make that are, like, very cool, but I don't know that this is it. Continue. Sorry.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think that brings up another point, in my opinion at least, is that, you know, this isn't a celebrity. This is a politician, you know? And I think being a politician, you know, AOC can do a tad bit more than people with only influence, you know, because she is an elected official. And it was just not, for me, it was not hitting right. It was just not, it was not it. It was, in my opinion, just very cringy. And just the whole set was just really, I don't know, it was, you know, no one was wearing masks, and the people that were wearing masks were like the people that was working, that were working there. And it's just kind of like, and then there were people actually outside of the Hunger Games, excuse me, Met Gala, that were, actually protesting, you know, and they did get, arrested, and they did face violence, and they, you know, they did, it just like, This is what you want to do? Like, why is everyone cosplaying? It's like 2021 just been the cosplay year. But we do have Dee Dee on the line. We'd love to hear your opinion around this. How are you doing, Dee Dee?
I'm doing good. How are you?
All's well. Thank you for calling in. What is your thoughts around this?
Well, I'm a docent at the Portland Art Museum. And one of the things that most people don't see is sort of the inside of museums that is actually a tax haven for people, for rich people, because what happens is people are able to loan artwork that's investment artwork into a museum for X amount of time, and then that piece of artwork becomes tax-free for the rest of that owner's time before they sell it. And so when I saw her wearing that dress, that's what it was speaking to me, is that museums are tax havens for artwork for rich people.
Oh my good, you just blew my mind right now, Dee Dee. That's a whole new level, a whole new layer that I didn't even...
I know, because I'm an artist, and when mm-hmm. I learned that about the Portland Art Museum and other museums, it kind of blew my mind about just the art world and creativity. Because really what artwork, museum artwork is about is hiding their money in artwork and then getting tax-free from museums. So anyway, I just thought I'd share.
Oh, thank you so much for that. That was an incredible addition. Really appreciate it.
I got something to add to that. Or for more, you can learn more about this sort of thing on fair.org, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. You can hear their weekly analysis of the past week's major press this evening as part of the KBOO Evening News at 5:30, their program called Counterspin. And they had a special program with economist Richard Wolff kind of breaking all of this down. And it's archived on FAIR's website, fair.org.
Thank you very much. Oh, see, this is awesome. If anyone else would like to add to the conversation, 503-231-8187, kind of talking about I'm just going to call it the Hunger Games, even though it's not, the Met Gala debacle. An AOC dress, again, keeping it very specific to the dress and the messaging around it, not as a person. Was this a political stunt? Do you think that it was effective in any way in influencing people and politics, or not? And interesting. Yep, can't forget that a lot of these things are big old tax write-offs for people mm-hmm. that can afford like Dalí paintings and stuff. That just museums, so political always.
Yeah, I think I saw somewhere that like in 2019. So the Met Gala is like a benefit for the Costume Institute, which is sort of like a subsidiary of the Met Museum. And I think in 2019, they made like $15 million, which is so much money. And I can appreciate like, you know, I guess the interest of preserving fashion through the ages as art. But I think that Dee Dee's point is like super interesting to bring up here, because, you know, what is the benefit of art, you know, and like who is the museum accessible to and who is it serving, you know?
Especially museums that you have to pay for, because not all of them are free.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild. That's wild.
Yeah, I think we're both kind of like blown away by that. It's like, oh, right, I forgot about that. You can write these things off. My goodness. Yeah, and the longer it is.
Yeah, we would know that if we were rich. I should be buying artwork and letting somebody put it in their museum.
Well, you mentioned the Cayman Islands, so I'm like, oh, well, Thea knows some rich people jerking. Okay.
No, I just read the Panama Papers. what is it? It's the Caymans, it's the Bahamas, it's Switzerland, I think. Not to put Switzerland on blast, but I'm pretty sure like Swiss banks are also a tax haven.
Well, if you're going to put the Caymans and the Bahamas on blast, why not Switzerland too?
Yeah, very fair. Anyway, back to AOC's Met Gala dress. Some of the discourse that I saw... Oh, did you want to say something, Sonia?
Yeah, I just in general, however effective it is, or it may or may not be, however much it may or may not be... achieving what AOC was trying to achieve, that so many people are trying so hard to put it down means that somebody is very terrified that it will be effective or that it will have an effect that they don't want.
I guess maybe that makes sense. I kind of plays to what I was just going to mention, which was like the idea of, you know, anti-capitalism, both in slogans and aesthetic, being commodified into capitalism. That tax the rich is a slogan that is a slogan that is, for, you know, like 99% of people, relatively agreeable. And, you know, the only way that you sell the elimination of a wealth tax to poor people is the idea that they'll get rich and it'll screw them over somewhere down the line, right? But that this idea of tax the rich is stuff that's on her merch and also is relatively, like, it's not subversive, the idea of taxing the rich. That's not saying anything that people couldn't already, like, mostly agree to, but there are these, like, massive moneyed interests that suppress that, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea that, like, it's that, you know, and I think that, like the punk movement, obviously, like, in the way that those, like, aesthetics have been absorbed and commodified as well, I think is, like, an interesting way of looking at that. But really, like, a lot of things that are counterculture that then come into the mainstream start from an anti-capitalist place, but then are, like, absorbed into the capitalist structure and, like, you know, lose their teeth in some way. And I think maybe that's what people are concerned about, is, like, this doesn't have the tooth that one would hope, you know, someone like AOC, who has, you know, championed progressive causes, has had in the past.
Well, the progressive causes that AOC and others in Congress and in the streets and organizing in communities will be much more feasible with those resources that can be appropriated from, you know, from that top 1% of the 1% wealthiest people and institutions. So it's, you know, if the idea of taxing the rich weren't some kind of transgression, why isn't it happening? So to keep that in front of everybody, you know, to put that message where people's eyeballs are, and especially at the Met Gala, which is where the elite are, and so opinion forming media will be paying attention to it, and will be saying this is what matters, and to put that message in the middle of something that the major media says matters and is important and that they're paying attention to, that's That's useful. That's important. And it needs to happen. If it didn't need to happen, the sign that it wouldn't, that it doesn't need to happen would be a 95% top marginal tax rate.
Right.
But that doesn't exist. So that in itself is evidence that this is an important message. And a large and considered a large event that is deemed important is the place to be putting that message.
Yeah. Well, folks, if you want to give us your thoughts on the Met Gala, on AOC's Met Gala address, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. Tammy, what do you think about all this?
I think there's something interesting in what you said and how these slogans and these just slogans kind of like lose their teeth a little bit once they hit the mainstream stage. And I feel you on that. And I think, I wonder if making it more palatable for the masses isn't necessarily a bad thing. Now, hear me out. And this is like a part of me is like kind of dying inside for even saying that. But, you know, you see like a young person and they see this thing, they keep seeing like, you know, AOC's new merch line called Tax the Rich, which, oh my God, can't even contain myself with how ridiculous that is. But I don't know, they see it and they keep seeing it everywhere. And then maybe they start wondering, what does this mean? You know, or I keep seeing like smash the patriarchy. What does this mean? And then they start doing a little bit of research on it. And I don't know. I think if you change one mind or like one get one person to do some sort of research, like even one, it can change. You know, that's a whole life that you could possibly change. And I think that maybe taking the teeth out of things a little bit makes it maybe not just more palatable, but just other factions can or other demographics can hear about it. You know, because like you know, you mentioned specifically like the punk movement, and it's like, it is very white and male dominated, and now that we have you know, like the internet and social media and stuff, there's a lot more like black folks in the forefront of like the punk movement, but there is like a type of gatekeeping for these things, like, oh, you aren't radical enough to do this, or you aren't this enough to actually be about this. And I think that people who do call themselves radicals, progressives, it's hard because you see how many things are wrong and how this system is infected in every aspect with, I don't know, whatever word you want to, you have white supremacy, you want to call it capitalism, whatever it is that is like the poison that that defines the system that we live under. It's in everything, right? And it divides us. So maybe just having a little bit of, I don't know, some sort of something to, I don't know, kind of like offset it a little bit. Is this the way to offset it? In my opinion, no. Is this a way to offset it? Or, I don't know. I felt a lot more secure about saying that this was a stunt and silly and meant nothing. But after listening to your and Sonia's back and forth, I'm a little bit like, well, I don't know, maybe she did do something in her own way, you know? Not in my way, but her own way. And who am I to say, oh, you aren't radical enough, or you can't do this enough? And like I was saying, when you're aware of the poison that's infected in all the system, then I think it's easier, and you stand up against it, especially when you stand up against it, I think it's easier for people to say, oh, you're a hypocrite because, well, you still have an iPhone, and or, oh, you still do this. It's like, yes, I also pay taxes, you know, but like, it's hard because it's everywhere. So I don't want to knock someone for trying to put something into the collective consciousness, but I also, I don't know, it would have been nicer if, I don't know, she was out there protesting with the protesters. I don't know, you know, like, that actually did get arrested, that, you know, like, there is a difference between the grassroots organizing and like movement versus like the mainstream. It is what it is. And if we have to hit it on all fronts, I guess that's a way. It's a way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope that, hope that makes sense.
I think what you said makes a lot of sense. And I think that, like, you know, I think it's an interesting topic for us to kind of like dissect, because, you know, in reality, what what do we want is for change? And is this how you affect change? Like, that's debatable, you know? But I think that there is oftentimes, like you're saying, like when you see the poison, you strive for perfection. And along the way, like, you know, cannibalize your own people who are with your same cause, you know? So, like, I totally understand that. But, I mean, I think it's rather poignant that the larger debate that is, like, you know, existing in the social consciousness right now is not if the rich should be taxed. It's like, well, but is this the right way to say that the rich should be taxed? Are we really, you know, making the rich be taxed in this way rather than should the rich be taxed? Which I think is kind of interesting. So I guess in the sense that, like, that's not so controversial, I guess, you know, that's a good thing. And, you know, public figures aren't limited to, you know, one particular sphere. She's allowed to, like, you know, leave the Capitol building. But I've also seen it likened to, like, when, you know, Democratic House members, like, knelt with kente cloth.
Oh, no, don't you get me started about Pelosi. Don't you even do it, Althea.
I know how that one is, like, I guess, less controversial as to whether or not it was meaningful. What's the opposite of tone deaf? Like, tone full? Understood and was with the tone.
It's just so upsetting. It was the Black Caucus that thought it would be a good idea. That's what the call was coming from inside the house. Oh my goodness. Ah, Nancy, one day we'll get our stuff together. But yeah, totally understood what it's not the statement, it's just the delivery. But I think in a time when you have pretty much everything grabbing for your attention, if maybe, you know, like what would the MLK say, like the advantage of, like, the spectacle or something, sometimes you do kind of got to make a spectacle to get a point across. But yeah, now dropping the line, tax the rich, merchandise the AOC. So silly.
Yeah.
So silly.
It existed before this dress from what I've read, but I feel like it undercuts it just a little bit. And again, I would also say you're not going to convince the rich to tax themselves, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't... And here's one other note. We're coming right up on the end here. I doubt that you would find someone at the Met Gala that was, like, made viscerally uncomfortable by a dress that said tax the rich.
There we go. Really getting to it. People are getting too comfortable with being uncomfortable. And and another thing, when you see something around too much at a certain point, does it start losing its meaning? These are all good questions. Really appreciate you. And also really appreciate Dee Dee for calling in and giving us that extra bit of range and depth to the conversation. Let us not forget, museums are a haven for tax write-offs. Ugh, so layered. This is going to be...
I was just going to say, I'm going to be chewing on that idea for a little while now.
Yeah, once we gotta get the Monet back in there or something, I don't know. We are just about out of time. Thank you all so much for tuning in. This has been The Gap. We will be back next week. Stay tuned for Veterans Voice coming up at 9 a.m. Don't forget that we are in the midst of our membership drive. Please go to kboo.fm/give in order to show your support for this program and other programs here on KBOO. Thank you so much. Have a great, great weekend. Thank you, Althea. Thank you, Sonia. And we will see you next week.
See you next time.
Bye.
Mr. No, no, no. KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. You don't know.
Tune in to KBOO every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th for KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series.